Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Tim Henney. Hey, quickly, you attended one of the Connect Summit County May Mental Health Awareness speaker series last night on the brain, and I couldn't go at the last minute, but how was it?
It was about brain development through, you know, development through life and the fact that we are developing, have high plasticity in our brains until the age of 23 or 24. I think for women it's, you know, maybe 22, and for men it's 24. And I have to say, Lynn, it was really fascinating. It was pretty heady stuff. It was a neuroscientist speaking to us from Calgary, a Canadian gal and doctor, and she was talking about a lot of things that we have talked about in the past in kind of segments about brain development. We've had a number of interviews on how brain development affects people's well-being, about substance use, about things that can, you know, get hardwired during that phase of plasticity. And, you know, there's a big thing about adolescence and mm-hmm. using substance abuse, and also just kind of the environmental impacts to the brain during this phase of high development. And that was the gist of it and the focus of it. It was a full room. It was done by Connect. It was a really great conversation. She spoke for an hour and a half and held that room on the edge of their seat an hour and a half, which is really something. And about, you know, pretty complex and sophisticated concepts. She tied them all together beautifully. And it was, you know, very worthwhile. And here we are getting down to the end of May Mental Health or Awareness Month, and Connect has done a whole series of great conversations.
So many great conversations. So that was, if someone wants to look her up, Dr. Nicole Sherren, Sherren. She's a neuroscientist, again, with the Palix Foundation. And just to preview, there are three more events. There's one tomorrow night at the Jim Santee Auditorium. It's a film called Heaven is a Traffic Jam on the 405. It's an Oscar-winning short documentary about an artist, Mindy Alper, who channels her depression and anxiety into her work. And it's followed by a panel discussion with psychiatrist Dr. Melissa Lopez-Larson and Ida Yoakt from Expressive Therapies Utah. And then on May 30th, also at the Jim Santee Auditorium, a film about eating disorders. It's called Dying to be Thin, this film, and it's also followed by a panel discussion. And finally, so that one at Jim Santee's on Wednesday, next Wednesday. And on May 31st, for the final event of the May Mental Health Awareness Month, at the Sheldon Richens Building Auditorium in Kimball Junction, 70 years of healthy minds, current research on brain and behavioral health. And that's all coming up. Three more events. Check connectsummitcounty.org. Well, now, are you ready to get your life back on track, Tim? You know, we all have upsets that we see come and go. Setbacks, hard times, recessions, unplanned personal crises. How we respond to those things and how we get back on track is what creates a better version of ourselves. Joining us to discuss their new book on the topic are two people whose lives were turned upside down and who emerged stronger, better, and are sharing their hard-won secrets in getting back happy. And that's the name of their new book. It's about changing your thoughts, your reality, and turning your trials into triumphs. Angel and Mark Chernoff, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thank you so much for having us. We're thrilled to be here.
Yes, thank you.
Great to have you. Well, I was looking you two up this morning, and wow, have you turned what was a really big personal crisis in your own lives into helping not only a bunch of other, but literally millions and millions of others through your blogs and your podcasts and this book. Take us back to the time in your life that, you know, well, when things got turned upside down.
Sure. We were in our late 20s, not at all into personal development and happiness. Things were good, you know, and we were suddenly slapped with reality, and like you said, the dark days were upon us, and we didn't even realize it. Our mutual best friend Josh passed away at the age of 27, died of an asthma attack in a hotel room when he was on a work trip, and that was devastating to us. I mean, so sudden, so young, leaving behind his wife and two children, who are very close friends of ours as well. And so we were, you know, dealing with that loss and trying to, like, figure out, you know, what we were going to do to step through this. And just as we kind of got to that point, Angel's older brother, Todd, died by suicide. And he was the smile in the room, always. He was also the tough guy that, you know, you'd go to with your problems. And obviously he had so much that he was hiding from us. Those two losses back-to-back sent us kind of into a tailspin. And this is right around the downturn of the economy 10 years ago. So the breadwinning jobs of the family disappear, and we were stuck for months on end. I mean, long story short is we finally got to a point where the sadness wasn't any longer the issue, or anger. It was emptiness. And we sought therapy and definitely were dealing with depression. We had the silver lining of each other. So we had stopped communicating with each other, too, although we were still living under the same roof and married. We were just withdrawn from just conversation, from the things that we needed to say to each other. And we caught ourselves, luckily, and made this pact and just kind of said, you know what, we are going to get ourselves out of the house every single day at the same time and let the sun hit our skin. We were living out in San Diego at the time. We're going to walk down this little boardwalk out to a place called Sail Bay and bring some personal development books with us, Byron Katie, Eckhart Tolle, you know, Wayne Dyer, Christian philosophy, Eastern philosophy. And we're going to do this together as a ritual. And that's why rituals are actually the baseline of the book Getting Back to Happy, which is maybe a little interesting because happiness is, you think of like rituals and habits as being kind of the core focus. But this ritual we started of literally as simple as leaving the house and, at the same day or the same time every day and going out to the bay and bringing these books literally changed our life. We would read these books individually and then have a conversation for an hour about what we were learning. And we were reading specifically to figure out how to step through the grief, how to cope, how to deal with the depression. We started markandangel.com, our blog, as a public accountability journal, not writing to anybody else, but we were writing for ourselves. We were literally writing our story and applying these principles we were learning to them and holding ourselves accountable to them. And, 10 years ago, social media wasn't as big as it is now, but it got picked up. People found it. They started sharing it. Suddenly we started getting, a deluge of comments from people that were saying, I resonate with your story. This was so amazing. Like, can you tell me more about this? Here's my story. What do you think I should do? And so, I mean, it was an accidental situation for us. I mean, we were trying to deal with our own issues. But over the course of many years, there was this transition that occurred where our focus went from us as we started healing onto those that we were helping. We started kind of online support groups that were all free. And from there, of course, went into, books and courses and coaching and so forth. It's been a journey, but, getting back to happy, the book actually takes us back to the beginning and focuses on the rituals that we leverage for ourselves. And then also for our coaching clients over the last 10 years, the ones that we've seen most effective in various areas of our lives, actionable, focused on what are the little things you're going to do daily, the hard little things you got to do daily to actually make progress.
Wow. So to me, it sounds like what you did is you focused on all things positive, and from that, you created a community of empathy around you where you were getting a lot of positive feedback that kind of grew your optimism. And then what you noticed was that all of these daily practices were, it was eliminating any of the negative in your life. And I noticed that on your blog this morning, there was this sort of general theme of how to eliminate these toxic, whether people or thoughts or structures in our daily lives.
Yes, and it's not, you can't remove them 100%. None of us are immune to life stressors and the negativity, but it's being able to recognize those without attaching to them or believing that that's all that's true, right? So it's what you're thinking and what you're focusing on and where you put your energy is what grows. So if you're focusing on the negative, you're going to see the negative. If you focus on the positive, you're going to see more of the positive. We do an exercise in our live event where we tell all of the attendees, we're like, okay, I want everybody in this room to look for the color red. Okay, so they're looking around, they look for the color red. And then we say, okay, close your eye. Now, I want you to raise your hand if you can tell me everywhere you see the color green. And, you know, there's a chuckle in the room, and there's not many hands that go up, because even though red and green can exist in the same room, they were just looking for red. That's where their focus was. So they weren't even seeing the green. They were looking right past it, even though they both coexist.
Yeah. It's funny. It's funny when you see that, too. Like, people wearing green shirts don't even realize they're wearing green shirts. what we focus on, we see more of in our lives. But we have to respect the negative, too. So I think there definitely is, we need to look at the positive. We need to not have our head stuck in the gutter. But we need to not bypass the negative either. We need to respect the fact that we have tragedies in our lives, that we have really bad days, that we have stress. And we need to bring awareness to that, too. So it's not so much, you know, negating the fact that it happened, as it is saying, I need to learn how to respond more mindfully to this as opposed to reacting to it. One way that you might be able to do that would simply be just tracking it. In the heat of the moment, when you feel the anxiety, when the pressure's strong, pause and literally write it down. Take 60 seconds and just interrupt that thought and be honest with yourself about how you're feeling. Just get it out of your head. Don't try to judge it or change it in that moment, because you're emotional, right? There's no reason. You can't work when you're in that high emotional state. You're just reacting. But just interrupt yourself and try to write it down as a ritual. Do that consistently. Then take your ritual of recording for the week, and once a week, maybe on a Saturday morning when you're calm and collected, when you're not in an emotional state, and go back and read your thoughts for the week. Go back and actually take a look at some of those negative thoughts. It might sound counterproductive, but it's not. You're bringing awareness to the fact, like, hey, this is how I'm feeling and reacting and responding in the most difficult moments in my week. You do that consistently, once or twice, a couple ahas, maybe a couple chuckles, maybe whatever. You do that consistently, and you arm yourself with understanding how you're thinking, right? You become more mindful of what's going on. And over time, that changes the way you think. You start to, you know, something happens and that you've dealt with before, and you're like, I remember. I've dealt with this many times before. Changes your response in the moment. So it's a balance of focusing on the positive, but also respecting the negative and the fact that it exists and learning how to cope with it effectively.
Mark, you mentioned earlier that when you and Angel decided to embark upon this, you know, personal development journey, and you came up with a ritual of going out in the mornings and walking and then reading from Byron Katie and Eckhart Tolle, and, you know, there are many other sources that have been around for a long time that have been dealing with personal development. There's the website Positively Positive with, you know, numerous people who blog and offer advice. What do you think, I mean, I was going to ask you, you know, who did you turn to, and you answered that, but what about the evolution of what you learned at that time from those people who were kind of holding the space, and what has evolved today where you're one of the people holding that space open for personal development, and are you offering something different? Has it evolved in any way that you can look at and kind of point to?
Absolutely. That's a great question. You know, what I love about it is when you're really focused on, let's say, the study of personal development, it becomes very obvious quickly that you have a handful of tools. I don't know how many there are. Let's say there's 50. Like a handful of like these foundational coaching practices and tools that you can leverage to change people. What is most amazing is how these same tools are used by people who are in totally different situations with very unique stories. And it's actually one of the things that inspires us to continue doing what we do. Working with people, hearing their stories, and leveraging these tools against these unique stories and watching the progress in their life is remarkable. And then being able to take those stories and share those with others who are in similar situations so that they might be inspired to say, hey, you know, I can do this too. Because that's a common thing we deal with. Like, they can do it, but not me. Like, I'm not good enough for that, right? This only applies to their life. That takes a lot of time and a lot of patience and a lot of consistency. But I think that's where you start to separate yourself as a coach, as a healer, as a teacher, right? Is that you are bringing your awareness and your presence to other people's real life stories, their real issues, their real feelings and emotions. And you are leveraging what you've learned, of course, from other human beings or from personal experience, and you're weighing that against other people's unique circumstances. And through that is new stories and just interesting perspectives. And I think that's what separates most of us and why, you know, you might be attracted to to one coach or teacher over another. It's not necessarily that these people, you know, you don't have to be a scientist studying something, inventing something brand new, but you have to have a unique way of applying that situation. And the only way you're going to have a unique way is to be consistent, right? To continue practicing and helping others and helping yourself. So that's really the difference in getting back to happy. I would say one of the biggest differences of the book itself is that most books on happiness do not start with actionable habits and rituals. That is not usually chapter one. For us, it is, because we realized that at the very beginning, it wasn't so much what we were doing as it was the fact that we just needed to start moving. Because that's a big misnomer in our life. Like we have to wait to find passion. We're going to find passion out there somewhere, and on that day, we're going to feel good enough to take a step forward. And we forget that passion is not something we go out and find. Passion comes from action. It comes from consistency. And you have to start thinking to yourself, like, you know, when was the last time I invested my whole heart and soul into this thing I'm doing? Not the next thing, but this thing, this conversation, this task, you know, whatever it is. And that's where you find those glimmers of passion, and you start finding a little bit of motivation, and you start taking steps forward. So I think getting back to happy is very actionable. It's very much based on the idea that we need to start taking little steps each day. And then it's applying a lot of stories. There's a lot of personal stories, but also a lot of client-related stories that we've gotten permission to share. You know, people who are dealing with everything from suicide to loss to just daily struggles that are very unique. They were moving to us, and others have said that they moved them as well. So.
Well, I'm glad you started talking about personal stories, because I was going to ask you about that. Lynn said before you two were on air that last night there was an event, and it was by a presentation by a doctor who's a neuroscientist. And one of the things that she connected was traumatic events in early life stages that then inform the way genes express, which then inform the way that people create their personal stories and what they organize around. And that is, you know, kind of the story that becomes their story later in life. And I know oftentimes you are dealing with people who have stories that are organized around possibly traumatic events that they don't even remember, but they are fear-based, they are scarcity-based, and this is somewhat biological and somewhat environmental and somewhat within the ability of people to address. And I think you're talking to those people who recognize that and want to address it. And how do they make the shift? How do they clear the slate and create a new personal story?
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. All day, every day, each one of us is telling ourselves story. You know, it can be as simple as you and I go to the movie theater and watch a movie and see the same exact movie, but we come out with a completely different perspective of that movie and idea of that movie because we have our own personal experiences, right? We are two different individuals, and our story about that movie is going to be based on our own personal experiences. And so I think once you realize that everything you are thinking is a story, once you realize that it is a story, you then have the power to change that story. You have the power to change the perspective, you know. Nothing is good or bad as our thinking makes it so. So it's realizing that in your response is your power. You know, when you're feeling stressed and overwhelmed, it's the response. The reason you're feeling that is in your response, not the way life is.
Now, to get to that point, though, is practice, right? That's where ritual comes in. You're not going to be able to change the way you feel about your story. And your story doesn't have to be false, right? This doesn't mean false story. I mean, some of us have dealt with some very significant real-world tragedies. So the story is just simply the realization that if 2 years later or a month later, it doesn't matter how long it is, if you're still feeling the same level of pain, you have to realize that this situation is not happening now. It happened in the past. The story is still replaying in your head again and again. And so we have to grab a hold of that, and we have to take a look at it. And recording those thoughts, recording negative thoughts, like when you're feeling those heavy emotions, when the stress is high, when you catch yourself in those hopeless moments, literally just taking that moment to pause and write down that thought, getting it out of your head, not trying to fix it, but just getting it out of your head can be very therapeutic in itself. But the practice of actually going back, if you've done recording, you've done enough of, that's why journaling can be such a huge part of coaching and healing. You've taken the time and you've been diligent about just recording these little moments of doubt and these moments of stress throughout your week. It, again, might seem counterintuitive to focus on something negative, but you can then actually, when you're feeling calm and collected, look at these thoughts, like look at these stories and work through them and ask yourself questions, you know, ask yourself, like, is this really all that's true here? Is it, you know, because when we're negative, when we're stressed out, our focus tends to be very narrow. We're missing everything in the periphery. So it doesn't mean that this thing didn't happen or this isn't necessarily true, but there's more than just that. Mm. And when we can broaden the perspective and slowly and gradually bring more of that periphery into perspective for ourselves, it changes the way we approach the next time we're feeling that way. And it's again, not a quick fix, but incredibly powerful over the long term. Mm-hmm. It's where Angel and I started ourselves.
Yeah, and it's finding that silver lining, you know. How are you a stronger person, and how are you able to step into the day because you have been through this, because you have experienced this, you know? It's hard. I know that from experience, but there is a silver lining in everything that we go through. I mean, even look at our own personal story, you know. I would never wish that, you know, our two loved ones passed away. But looking back on it now, I can see how that personal experience has given us the ability to now help so many others. And so there's always that silver lining. You've got to look hard for it, but it's there.
If you're just joining us, our guests are Mark and Angel Chernoff. Their book is Getting Back to Happy: Change Your Thoughts, Change Your Reality, and Turn Your Trials into Triumphs. They're also the creators of Mark and Angel Hack Life. And, you know, I wanted to ask you about leveraging these tools to first recognize the story, because we might not even recognize that it is a story. And then when we do, for example, I have a friend who went through something fairly traumatic, and I will hear this person say to me at the time they're rehashing the same story that they've been hashing over with friends to themselves for years. You know, I'm getting sick of my story. I'm getting sick of it. And yet it's so difficult to propel yourself out of that and take that first step that makes you discontinue talking about it in the same way and rehashing it the same old way that's not serving you. What would you suggest to that person?
Yeah, it can be very tough to break the cycle. I mean, that's one of the things. So the foundation of the book is rituals, but it's important to note that rituals are just positive, right? We have a lot of negative rituals in our life, and one of them oftentimes is reflecting on and more or less just engrossing our mind and our entire conscience in these things that have happened in the past that are disruptive, and we're not doing it in a healthy way, right? We're doing the shoulda, woulda, coulda.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of tools, but I'll tell you one thing that can help, like on a very simplistic level, and it's not applicable to everyone because it might sound almost kind of, if someone's dealing with grief, for instance, you know, they might think it's almost wrong to do it. But if you have a thought, if you have a certain thing that you're attaching to, and it's just like, you know, let's say it's a thought about not being good enough for some reason, you were laid off and now you're not good enough for the next job, and you know, of course, that's affecting your ability to go on interviews, it's affecting, you know, so you're just, I'm not feeling good enough for these people. Noticing that, right? Getting yourself to the point where you actually are, okay, that is what I'm saying to myself, you know, and accepting it. And then changing the voice, you know, almost think of like Scooby-Doo or Mickey Mouse. Like, if you were to repeat, I am not good enough, in one of these cartoon character voices, it would sound ridiculous coming back at you. That has the ability sometimes to very effectively snap somebody out of a mantra of, you know, of I'm not good enough or whatever the thought is. And it doesn't happen instantly. Sometimes it gives some chuckles in the beginning. But we've seen clients where, like, literally that just getting them set up with something simple like that is enough to interrupt them and get them realizing, hey, I'm doing this to myself. And it can be quite interesting. So it's a good place to start.
Yeah. Hey, what did the two of you do before you did this?
Sure. I actually, I was a contractor, a background in computer engineering, mm-hmm. a contractor for the military, for the Marine Corps. I was working over at Miramar, and that's why we were out in San Diego initially.
And I have my MBA degree, and I was working at a university.
Oh, wow. Well, you've done a great thing here with presenting this. And you do present at the very end of the book a couple calls to action, which is what we all need. And one of them, well, of course, it involves purchasing your book. But talk about those calls to action quickly before we let you go.
Sure. One of the big calls to action, we would hope that you're going to join us for the journey. We love hearing people's stories. So just going to markandangel.com, markandangel.com. We also host a live annual event. We do it usually on the East Coast one year and the West Coast next year. Next year we'll be in San Diego. It's called Think Better, Live Better. We bring in, this isn't just us being on the stage, being talking heads. We bring in a lot of great experts to help share their experiences with others. So those would be two great calls to action. What do you want to call it?
Yeah, and just being part of the community, check us out on Facebook. You can search Mark and Angel Hack Life.
Okay.
You know what? You guys should think about somewhere in between the East Coast and the West Coast for one of your live events. Somewhere
You're
really close
right.
to an international airport.
I left it out, though. The first one we did actually was in Austin, Texas, so we did do one in the middle. We were due to go back, though.
I was thinking a little further north and
like
at
Park
elevation.
We'll get up into that area for sure.
We can make that happen.
All right. Mark and Angel Chernoff, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Lynn, you know what?
What?
I don't believe they're podcastable. I searched and they did
they
not
have
pop
a,
up.
I did say podcast, but I think I said that incorrectly. They do a blog and they have
blog.
Various, you can find various audio pieces with them,
yeah.
which I maybe misconstrued a podcast.
But you can podcast us. And since
you can, KPCW, the Mountain Life.
I want to point out who is and who is not yes. podcastable on every single topic and person we talk to.
And in fact, Mark and Angel are podcasted. Because they're now going to surface on our show.
Right.
So if you'd like to hear this interview again, go to KPCW, The Mountain Life.
And did you get the text that we've received? Mountain Madness is happening tonight. It's the Mountain Trails Foundation.
Oh, it'll
annual
be a fun
event.
Party.
It's at the Doubletree Hotel, starts at 5:30. And this is where you can learn about all the projects upcoming for this summer and kind of where things stand, all things trails related in our wonderful 400-mile of single-track community.
Oh, it's a great community. And free food and a cash bar, I believe, and lots of swag
yep.
that, you know, has Mountain Trails logo posted all over it, which we know is a very fun logo. So we'll see you there. I'm going.
It's fun to see those trail lovers from our community all gather in one place.
That's
and
right.
And then, Lynn, aren't you going out and making some comments at the Kimball Junction Transit Center?
Actually, yes. We're having the launch of the e-bike share program at the Kimball Junction Transit Center at 11:45.
Today.
Yes, I'm going to ride my e-bike out, not my shared one. I don't share my e-bike. Much. No, actually, I do.
I'd
ride,
my
out there.
Bike, but
if
I can't.
You had one. Yeah. It was stolen.
We will not talk about that.
No, we won't. It's really sad. But anyway, it's the second annual launch of this great program. I've been seeing people all over the place riding their bikes.
It's like everybody is on an e-bike.
Yeah.
How did that happen? Because
we
I
knew
thought
it was
there
coming.
Was amazing use last year.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, the city and county e-bikes, they
yeah.
are everywhere.
And that's right. We'll see you out there. It's the Mountain Life. Stay with us. We'll be back to talk about gerontology, a new gerontologist in town. Stay with us.
Matt here from San Francisco Design, supporting our local radio station, KPCW. Since 1990, San Francisco Design offers interior design and a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings with store locations in Salt Lake City and Park City on Bonanza Drive. On the web at sanfrandesign.com, San Francisco Design. Love your home.
Valley Behavioral Health is a local nonprofit and proud supporter of KPCW. We are your community behavioral health center and provide a broad range of services, including individual, family, couples, and group therapy for mental health and substance abuse. We serve all ages in all of Summit County. Please check out our website at valleycares.com or 649-8347 for more information.